Okay, I think we're just about ready to go for the next hour. During the break, somebody asked a question about whether you could mix a knot with other symbols if you cared to, and the answer is yes. In this particular case, the knot, when it's encountered, knots out everything up to the closing bracket. So this would be saying anything that's not a 0 to 9, but also include an A or B. But of course, since it's a situation where not 0 to 9 would include A and B anyway, it's not necessary to do this, but it is allowed. So just for completeness on that. So my train of thought when the buzzer went off, and see if we're set on this time. Yeah. Was one of the nice thing about having... Oh, yes. No, this case, it'll give you A and B and then also add in everything that's not a 0 to 9.
Correct, but if you have A through
Z, both cases, then exclude Q. Would it actually exclude Q? No, when you say not, you say everything but a Q. But if it's already in there, you know, it's in there. So, yeah.
So
I believe so. I've never actually done it, so but I believe the rule is that it's additive and that it does not apply to previous characters defined. So if somebody wants to try it, you can report back, but that's my understanding of it. But I haven't tried it, and I hate to be definitive when I'm not sure. So the point I was making was that one of the apparent weaknesses of this definitional mechanism is really a great strength. Namely, you're allowed to have overlap. Notice in many program definitions, like we were just doing on the current assignment, having multiple definitions for an identifier, like A, is bad. This is, which one do you mean? You could argue that having two different patterns that overlap some certain set of strings is bad, because you don't know whether it's meant to be the one or the other. You can turn that into a strength, however, by having a fairly easy and straightforward resolution mechanism. And really, in scanner generators like JLEX, the two rules are so easy that they become intuitive. One is you always do the longest possible match. That's almost required, because otherwise you could never have long matches, because you'd have a partial match on the character and you'd stop too early. So longest possible match is automatic. That means the only thing you have to worry about is if you match exactly the same length of string. That would happen, for example, reserve words versus identifiers. And there it's the case that the order in which you provide the definitions is used as a disambiguating mechanism. So it's like the old days when you would send in a box top to a contest, you know, win yourself a trip to Disneyland, the original Disneyland, and it would always be the earliest postmark wins in case of ties. Well, in this case, the earliest postmark is the earliest placement in the file. So all that means in practice is you put your reserve word definitions first, they have first crack at matching, and you put your identifier definition later, saying if I don't match a reserved word, I'll go down there and I'll have a chance then of matching the identifier. But if both would match, it'd say the earlier definition, the reserved word applies. Another cool thing, you say, well, wait a minute, suppose I had lots and lots and lots of overlap, this is going to be terribly slow. But it turns out it's not. This is all programmed in advance, transformed into these finite automata I showed, and the matching is exactly the same speed whether you have overlaps or not. It simply sets things up so that in case of the overlap, when it sees IF as if, it labels that particular state as, say, I'm a reserved word, I'm not an identifier, even though I could have been. So it doesn't cost you the least bit in speed, which is really remarkable. It oftentimes seems that the more conflicts you have, the slower it ought to be. But with good theory, that's not necessarily going to happen. And that gets me down to what I was talking about earlier. I stole some of my thunder, namely, you may want a catch-all pattern to catch errors. It's good to have that because you don't quite know what's going to be allowed or disallowed as a design evolves. So it's good to say, if nothing matches, I'm going to go ahead and have a pattern. In fact, I believe JLEX has the rule that if you don't give a pattern for something and the character is found, it aborts you out. It throws an exception and terminates the scanning. It says, well, you didn't anticipate it. I don't know what to do with it. I'm keep going. Earlier systems would go ahead and essentially just ignore something. That's not so good because if you ignore a bad character, the user may not know the bad character was there, and there might be a misunderstanding against what's being scanned and what the user thought was being scanned. So that was not a good design decision either. So you put a catch-all pattern in, and the example I talked about was a dot. But of course, you put that at the very bottom because you don't want it to exclude single character matches like a comma or a semicolon or a paren. And as I mentioned earlier, you do not want to iterate that. So something like dot star is extremely dangerous and something that you really would want to avoid. Don't worry about that. If you try it, you only make that mistake once. There's certain errors which you know it's gone wrong and you back out of that real quick. I promised you having a table, and I think this is very useful. And actually, this spans two pages. So what I recommend is at some point when you start doing the project, have access to that. I'm a paper kind of guy because I like to write stuff down there. So I'd print these out. But you can also just have your browser preset to go to these pages and look at it. Now, what these do is they have two different interpretations. In some cases, in fact, most cases, a symbol that's magic in one interpretation is ordinary in the other. But the one that says in a regular expression at the top level where I'm defining a token, if I see these symbols, this is how they're used. By implication, if I don't bother listing something, it's ordinary and just can be used as is. There's also a possible interpretation in a character class. Occasionally, a symbol is magic in both, but the magic is different. Good magic versus bad magic or something. Harry versus who was the lizard-headed guy? Lord Baltimore, right? That's right. So I never been to Baltimore, and now I know why. So, you're right. Thanks for knowing. I've used this before, and you're the first guy to notice it. Give yourself a pat on the back. Yeah, it's a situation there. That begins a character class. That's a trouble with typing. So I'll make a note of that and try to get that repaired when I generate the next set. So that's line 3. Page, what is it, 99. Golly, it's amazing. People actually read stuff, and I got to be more careful. Eventually, it all evolves properly. So if, for example, you had a question of what do parens mean, well, they mean grouping, in character classes not. And you could use escapes, for example, in both contexts. I'm not going to go through all of them because I've talked about most of them. In fact, let me double check and see if there's any that I haven't gotten to, not on that page. Oh, yeah, this thing I mentioned to you, you may not need it, probably won't, in fact, but there is a context-sensitive matching, and that's an ordinary slash. And this is a situation where you say match something, but only in the context of this following it. And, again, some languages require this, ours won't, so you probably won't need this. But if you find it handy, by all means, be aware that it exists. We talked about the iterators, talked about caret and dollar sign, and minus as the range operator. So this is just a summary for my own use and for your use of all the symbols you'll probably need. And if you find something going wrong, one of the first things you want to do is check this, verify, at least after I've done the correction on the square bracket, that what you think a symbol does is what this table seems to suggest it was designed to do. That, of course, is also in the documentation, but this makes it a little easier by being in one place. Let me talk about a couple of problems using JLEX. These are little gotchas. In some cases, they differ from other versions of Lex. In other situations, it's simply something that you might not have expected. And I just found those by debugging scanners with people and finding, gosh, this doesn't do what I thought it would do. So escape characters within quoted strings are not recognized. That's not so much a surprise, but it's something where you might misread it. As again, one of the big problems in using these tools is when does backslash n represent two characters and when does it represent one invisible character? And you're sort of at the border where you're controlling it. In the original files coming in, be they JLEX or input to be scanned, backslash n is never magic. It's up to you either in the definition of a token or in processing input characters, in defining the tokens that your programming language has to make them magic. You say, oh, I saw two characters, but it becomes one character. So in this case, in quoted strings, backslash n is not a new line character. Outside of a quoted strings, it is. Question is, why did I have that difference, or why did they do it? Well, suppose I want to turn the magic off. How do I do that? Well, typically, quotation is one of the ways of doing that. So if backslash n unescaped means the new line character, the one character, if I want to turn it off using quotation, it seems to make a lot of sense. And that seems to be the definition they chose. So I don't want backslash to be magic in this context, so I'll quote it, double quote it. So unquoted works in ordinary expressions. It also works in character classes, as you would expect. So those are fine there. For some reason, a blank should not be used in a character class. I don't know if there's any good reason for that other than some mechanism was implemented wrong and they decided to change a bug into a feature. That's, of course, something you folks never do, right? That situation. You don't say, oh, no, that's not wrong. This is just our interpretation of what this or that means. And if you folks never do it, you're saints, because in the software world, that is one of the most common ways to handle errors, is to unclassify them as non-errors. And also a situation that a double quote must be escaped within a character class. Now, that one I'm not so sure of, but just be aware of this. So this is another page where you might want to mark it and say, if something's going funny, let's see if one of these gotchas is really getting me. They're simply the way Jalix decided to do things, and we should be aware of them because occasionally people misinterpret and get something other than what they expected. Okay, yeah, unprintables. I was going to talk about that. So one of the things you have to worry about is unprintables, and what's a good way to specify unprintables? Well, if you look at the ASCII character definition, all the characters below blank. Now, blank is one of these funny things. It's not considered unprintable, but it's still kind of invisible. But it's a situation. I mean, you need blanks. You know, you can never get by without blanks. So that's considered printable. But everything below it, in the ASCII character set, octal 40, that is decimal 32, is blank. And everything below it, from 0 all the way to 37 octal, is unprintable. And at the very end, after ASCII had been partially or almost fully designed, they decided they needed another one, and they shoved that as the very, very last character, and that's octal 177. So those are a good definition. Again, this is something you might want to mark. At some point, if I have to figure out what unprintables are, I've gone and given it to you in a way as a character class that's pretty easy to write down. And of course, you can fiddle with this if you want. In some cases, you could have some unprintables, and if you wanted to include things other than unprintables, you could add those in there. So here are the unprintables. What might you want to add in? Remember, there's some other bad characters too. Bad in the sense they require special handling. So for example, in the text of a string, you can't have an unprintable. You could have the escape sequence, which encodes the unprintable, but not the unprintable itself. But you also can't have a double quote, a backslash, and what else? There's one other. Whatever it is, that has to be specially handled. So you might want to exclude those and say, I can't read those in raw form. I've got to handle those in escaped form. So when you get around to that, make a little note of that, and you'll be able to utilize that. Okay, cool. What we're going to do here is I'm actually going to go ahead and show you on Eclipse a version that's running. But people are saying, well, actually, how do I get this all going? I'm going to show you the code, so I have it on the screen here, so it's a little easier to read. And then I'll actually have it available in a file up on the class webpage where you can download and play with it. This one actually, I hope people haven't read too far ahead in their notes, because there you have a little game we can play at the end here. But this is essentially going to be a scanner that looks for five-letter words that begin with P and end in T. Either case, we don't care. Usually lowercase, but it doesn't matter. One way to think of this as, if you're really desperate to do a crossword puzzle and you don't want to search through all the P's in the dictionary. But again, remember we talked about earlier that a version of this could be used if, for example, you were at the DMV and you had to worry about bad words, controversial words, being somehow compressed in some way into form that a license plate might exist and might be objectionable. And sometimes this really occurs. This is a true story, by the way, not all mine are, but this one is. I was driving along University Avenue past Hilldale, going out, you know, towards Middleton, and I saw a Mercedes-Benz red convertible with the top down. So it wasn't recently, as you might imagine. And the vanity plate on there was that. And I, no, anything, I saw that there, and I knew it was a vanity plate because it's way shorter than a typical plate. And the interesting thing was the person driving it was a very attractive young woman. Noticed that too, surprisingly. And I was trying to figure out what it was. So I guessed, and I'll let you guess along with me. And then it turns out my guess may have been wrong. So, situation. So my original guess was what? What did I guess that QTI stood for? QT, as in, yeah, as in I'm a cutie, not me, but perhaps that woman was. And I, me. So I thought it was a little bit vain, but I mean, situation, if you're driving around in a red Mercedes convertible in Madison, you know, you got to expect to be noticed, whatever. So I thought that was it. You know, it's a situation, oh, I decoded a very obscure vanity plate. But it turned out weeks later, I found out there was a temporary agency very close to where I was that was Quality Temps Incorporated, abbreviated QTI. So to this day, I do not know which of those two it was. It may have been this person was the owner or a major manager or something like that, and saying, no, I'm doing well enough in my business that I can drive around a Mercedes convertible. Or it might have been the original interpretation and situation there. But so you can imagine having programs that try to go ahead and take vanity plates. This would have been very obscure. I'm not sure how a program could do that. But we talked about the fact that there are certainly some plates that, you know, like... baseball season coming up, and you might see a plate like that. And situation there. Actually, I hate the White Sox way more than the Cubs. So, and I hate the Cardinals even more because they actually beat the Brewers all the time. But Cubs have a good team this year, so that may be their year. So anyway, you can imagine doing something like this to try to take list of words that are forbidden or problematic in any way and convert them. So something like having H8 in it. They knew that's abbreviation for hate, and there's lots of other nastier ones that I won't put down that might be included. But this is a very simple one, and my purpose, first of all, is to just show you how we encode it, and then we have a little fun actually running it. So I actually have the answer on the sheets down the line, so if you peeked ahead when we get to it, please be quiet about answering it. So this is actually the program source that will run it, and I'll go through this, and then we'll actually show you on Eclipse where it is and run it that way. So remember, one of the things you normally want to define is the class object you're going to return. JLX doesn't know how fancy a token you're going to have to return is. They don't even know you want to call it a token. We're calling it a token because we're doing scanning, but somebody doing DMV, it could just be a definition of a word or something. So in this particular case, I have a very simple definition. I said all I want to do in this case is keep track of strings, and I'm going to have a constructor that says, when I see a particular string, I'll build a token, and the string will be wired in there, and I'll return the token. I'm doing that because, in general, I want to return a token structure, and I want to have a special pattern when I hit end the file. Well, here's the case where I'm using some of those character classes, and the trick I'm going to do is I stole or borrowed an actual dictionary file from Unix, and there's plenty of those around. This is a fairly simple one. It just lists of all the words that the Unix spell checker knew about and compare against those for valid or invalid spelling. So occasionally it had digits in there. I want to anticipate those. Obviously letters in both upper and lower case. It would have some special other characters in it. Besides digits, it would have a tick symbol, I guess, for like McDonald or something, and ampersand for Smith and Jones, and dot in case you had an abbreviation like Mr. So-and-so. White space, remember I'm doing this trick here where in white space, rather than putting a blank, I'm putting octal 40, which is the decimal or the octal equivalent of blank because I'm trying to run this through JLEX. So white space in this case is just blanks and new lines. I guess it's simply there were no tabs in this file because it was the form one word per line. So I got to tell what I want JLEX to return. I say, please return that token. So I include the token definition, and it's going to program itself up to return it. These comments, by the way, are one line. They broke simply because it wouldn't fit on my screen. So I have to tell it what to return when it hits end the file. So this little block here says, when you hit end the file, here's what I want you to do. In your scanner, you can probably borrow what I did in the CSX Lite and you use that for full CSX. So you won't have to change that, I would imagine. In this case, I'm simply returning the null reference for the case where I'm hitting end the file. It said, give me the next word. There wasn't any word, so I just have the null reference. And my program will then check for that special case as a terminating condition. So this is all boilerplate, and here's the actual patterns. As you might imagine I'm going to have one pattern comes first, because remember the priority rule is here's the pattern of things I want to match. So what do I want to match? I'm expecting one word per line, so I'll match the word plus any new lines or white space that happens to be included. Don't know if it's in there or not, so I'll expect it. So it says, give me a P, upper or lowercase, I don't care. Now it says, I want to have three letters, I don't care what they are. So I went ahead and created this pattern that says A to capital Z, A to lowercase z, or any letter. The braces around this says, take this definition, any letter, and logically substitute this character class. I could have written the character class itself. This reads a little bit better. So in this case, it says, give me any letter, any letter, any letter, and then a cap or a lowercase t, and then match any remaining white space, including the new line, just so that the next match will start on a new line. It says, if this guy matches, return me a new token. YYText is a built-in function that says, whenever I match a token, I can give you the actual characters I just matched. Could be a single character, could be a whole run of characters. And YYText is a function that'll give me that, and I'll use that in my constructor. So now tokens will have in it a string representing the actual string that was matched, presumably something that begins with P, ends with T, and has five characters. What about all strings that don't match, and there's a lot of those? What I'm going to do is simply match those out. So I simply say it can be any letter, and I'll include in the others because some of these words have these special characters in them. I found that out by not having them in there and having the thing fail. So give me a run of anything that might be in there other than white space, one or more of those, white space, and then my action is simply skip. So what it's going to do is match a whole ton of things that don't work, throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. Of course, computers are so fast, we're never going to notice that, and just return back the tokens that I care about. I have to call this thing, so this will be the driver. Essentially, in your case, this will be in the file P2. That's the project. It's a little fancier. This is not quite as fancy. So it says I got to import the I/O, class main. I'm going to have the old public stack void main, blah, blah, blah. It turns out that Lex may throw an I/O exception, so I just pass that along. So if I get an I/O exception, I'm going to pass it back to the call to the original caller, and it'll cause termination. I got to create a scanner. The way I do that is I'm going to run, as I'll show you in a moment, actually run JLex, and it's going to create a scanner for me, and it's going to be called YYLex. And YYLex has a constructor that takes the name of a file, an input stream file, I think it's called. And this is a normal standard input, system.in. So it goes ahead and does that. It's going to then create me a YYLex object. That's the actual scanner. And when I have a scanner, I can call the function YYLex parens that says, give me one more token. So this guy gives me my initial token. That's just to start out the while loop. So it says, give me my first token. And now I have a while loop that says, while I'm not at end of file, how do I know if I'm at end of file? Well, the text inside my token will be the null reference if it's, I am end of file. Otherwise, it'll be some valid string. If it's a valid string, I'm going to print it out. I'm going to tab it out, print it out, and do print. So in this case, I'm just tab separate them. And then I call the scanner for another. So it just calls, only returns when it sees a valid token, and away we go. Okay, I think my next one is the solution. So let's have a little fun. I think I counted 11 possible answers. Let's see how many of those we can get. If you read ahead and know the answers, please don't disappoint us. So let's think of some five-letter words that begin with P and end with T. Print. Hey, yeah, programming language. That's one. What else? Plant. That's two. Point is three. Pilot. Hey, that's good. Most people don't get pilot. Which one? Yeah, that sounds right. No, T, I'm sorry. Nope. Oh, you conned me into it. I agreed too quickly. So we're back to four. If you have a nicely pressed pair of pants, what do you have? Pleat. Excuse me? Did we say paint already? No. Okay, we got it. Yeah, hardly ever get that one. They're good. You must do crossword puzzles. There's one that people hardly ever get. In the old days, I used to go to County Stadium, and There was a beverage they sold there. I don't think they sell it anymore. It's now called Miller Park. And County Stadium was not Miller Park, so what was it? Pabst. Nobody's ever had a Pabst? Oh, I'm embarrassed. You're Wisconsin. I know, you're all teetotalers. They don't allow adult beverages here, right? So the strongest you have is black coffee. I think we got most of them. Let's see what have we missed here. Pabst, remember that one straight away. Paint, Petit, that one we missed. Pilot we had, Pivot, missed that one. Plant, I think we had that, did we? Yeah, Plant we had. Pleat, I hinted at. Point we had. Posit, that's a fancy one. Hardly ever get that. Pratt, there was a computer scientist named Pratt who was included. And Print, did very well. So let's actually go now and actually look at the program and see the program form of it. Of course, the files will be the same. That's why I projected them. I don't know why this thing is so slow changing back. So let's see if I can find my... Yeah, I think it's the JLEX test. Yeah, that's the same one. So let's go and do a build. I'll just do a clean initially just to make sure any gunk that I had is gone. What did you do? This ran before. Let's try to compile first. Cool. Okay, so let's look at this first. That's what I want to show you. This is the output you're likely to see when you're building a scanner. So I wanted to show you that just so that you're not surprised. So what it's doing is, this is actually run, produced by JLEX. JLEX is a Java program, so it shows Java. And it's going to print out little messages just like a compiler would. So in this particular case, it's talking about the sections it's doing. Presumably, if it has errors, it'll tell you that what it's unhappy about. What this states is about is, remember I showed you these circles and arrows. And these things are called states. And for this simple case, it had to produce some 23 states and transitions among those states. And it's just telling you that, mostly just as a measure of how complex things are getting. Occasionally, very occasionally, you can write down a simple-looking definition that has a humongous number of states. It's very rare, but it is possible. I don't think you'll ever do it accidentally, but it's theoretically possible. So it's going ahead. It's working on the states. It's going to build the table. And it's going to minimize the size of the table. And after redundant states, it gets down to 9 states, which is pretty good for what it's doing. And it talks about it built the where it built the source and all the compiling it did to get there. And now let's try running the test. I think my error before was I hadn't done the compile properly first. So, yeah. And there's our words that we expected to see. So this is available on the class webpage, and if you want to download it at some point and play with it a little bit, that's fine. I'll actually have another simpler one for next class that allows you simply to test individual regular expression patterns. You're going to be working on, and I'll show you next, the actual CSX light scanner. But that may be too complex, particularly if you're having trouble with one particular token. So one thing that's sometimes handy is they have something that just focuses on one regular expression, runs it, and allows you to do a test file and say, well, it should match this, it shouldn't match that, and let's make sure it's matching everything I want. So for example, when you're doing quoted strings, there's quite a variety. It could be an empty string, a long string, a string with escapes. You might want to put in a string, a string that had an illegal character, an unprintable character, just so that when you catch it, you print out the appropriate error message and the thing doesn't go bonkers, as I showed you about misscanning the remainder of the program. So a number of things to try, and sometimes in isolation is a better way of doing it. So I'll give you that, and I'll talk about that next time. You could also just modify what we have here. But what I have is essentially something like this. It has one line, and it tries to match it, returns the text of what it matches, and it has a driver that says, I match this, I match that, etc. So it's a good way to debug an expression if you're not quite sure what's going right or what's going wrong, or is it as robust as you had hoped. So we'll be getting back to these guys. Any questions about what we saw? Well, one of the things you say, what do I have to do and not do? And the cool thing about this is once you have the driver, that's the Java program that calls the scanner, and you know how to generate the scanner by calling JLEX, most of your focus is going to be on those lines that say, here's a pattern, here's what I want done when I see the pattern. All the other stuff has to be put in place, but that's boilerplate in the sense it's done once and doesn't change very much. And that's the cool thing about having CSX Lite. I'm not giving you a heck of a lot, but I'm giving you all the infrastructure around it so that you can then focus on doing the scanner token by token. And I think for that reason, it's by no means trivial, particularly when you get to complex tokens. But it's doable in the sense that each thing you get working is going to stay working. It's not a question, oh, I added this and that broke that. That happens in way too many programs. And in this particular case, each line is pretty much independent. In fact, as I mentioned in an earlier lecture, except for this rule about having priority for equal matches, you could take all the lines in the scanner definition and shuffle them up using a card dealer, and it wouldn't matter. It does matter in the sense that for equal matches, the earlier one has to have priority. But for example, in reserved words, do you have to give your reserved words in alphabetic order? The answer is heck no. Put them in any order you want because each one is different and they all come before the identifier. And that's all that really matters. So there's a lot of power there that you don't see in all programming contexts. Oops, try that again. Activate them before you do it. I don't know why it takes so long to transition like this as a fast processor. So this is the other specification I was going to talk about and give you. This is the one you start from. So this is the CSX Lite. And again, this is a tad more complex than the earlier one, but now we've seen something, we're ready to go. So it says here you can expand this to your solution for Project 2 by adding new tokens. So this token definition I give you, you can pretty much stand as it is. This is a token that contains a line number and a column number. We're actually going to return something called a symbol. The reason we're returning a symbol is because that's what the scanner that we're later going to generate wants. And of course, we want to make sure that our scanner and parser are cooperating properly. Situation that one of the worst things you can have is to have one component expecting one thing and another expecting another. And there can be embarrassing situations where somebody did a change and the other person hasn't heard about it. In fact, there's a great one. I don't know if you ever heard this. These days, it's pretty common to have a probe going to Mars. They have them quite routinely, and it's, oh, yet another one. But there's one that failed, and I forget its name, but you can look it up. This is one of the true stories I have from Wikipedia. You can probably look it up, where they sent a probe to Mars, United States, that is, and it didn't quite work. And does anybody remember a story about why it didn't quite work? They made a slight error. Turns out half the team did the probe. I think it's probably the differentiation was the people who did the probe to get the get the launcher to get the probe into orbit or near Mars versus the guys who did the actual control on the Martian lander. Now, you normally put it into orbit and then land it, soft land it somehow. Well, one of the teams did all their numbers in metric. And the other team did all their numbers in imperial, miles and pounds and so on. And guess what? They didn't quite match as you might have expected. So in this particular case, the probe got somewhere and the transition was such that being yay many million kilometers from Earth is not the same thing as being yay many million miles from Earth and whatever. And the thing was a total loss. So the government being the way it was, nobody got hammered on it, but you know, situation. I imagine if you did that here, you'd all be paying $10 a month from your paychecks until you're retired and then probably past that. So it's a situation where that is really foolish. I'm truly amazed it ever got that far. But, you know, and to err is human, but to really screw up, you need the U.S. government, and that is there. But a simpler version of this does occur, and one of the things we're trying to avoid is that the person who does the scanner and the person who does the parser don't cooperate properly in the form of the tokens. One of the things that's important is we're going to have token codes, that if you see a plus, it's code so-and-so. If you see a minus, it's code so-and-so. Doesn't much matter what those numbers are, but they better be consistent. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and we're going to follow the rules of the scanner. Wants. This is a Java cup. So that if it expects a symbol of a particular form, we're going to give it, and therefore the scanner and parser will cooperate properly. If you do it ideally, they work very smoothly, but if you mess up, you have this kilometers versus imperial, and that's very embarrassing indeed. So we're going to have this token, and this one you can use exactly as it is. So I didn't want to take the chance of people inventing their new tokens and having them have different parameters and so on and maybe mismatching. Besides token, we're going to have some subclasses. Remember that what you can do in Java, as in C++, is if you have a class you like, you can subclass it to say, I want that class, plus I want to add something to it. So CSX token is a normal thing for ordinary tokens, like plus and minus and comma. But there are special tokens that need extra info. For example, things that have to store information about the content of the token. So one of those, of course, is the integer literal token. That's got to have the number. So it's going to have an extra field that says, here's my integer value. So when you scan something, you say, that's an integer, you're going to have to convert it from a string into a number. It's not as easy as it seems. I'll show you a pretty safe way of doing it, because I or the TA may decide to throw a huge number at you, something that has so many digits, it can't possibly be represented as a 32 or 64-bit integer. In fact, we may throw a number at you so large it cannot be represented as a 64-bit floating point number. I think floating point numbers, I think the maximum exponent is something like 300 or something. Pretty big, but not universally big. So we're going to actually come up with a scheme that even is robust in that context. And the reason we're going to do it is because the Java folks have done most of the hard work and we're just going to steal it from them. But that's good. I mean, people do work. One of the first things that people have to learn in computing is don't reinvent the wheel. One of the great things about Java is that there's lots and lots and lots of great classes out there that you can use. In fact, one I'll give you a little heads up on. We don't have it in Project 2, but we will have it in Project 3, is when you get around to testing your program, the way it currently works is you have to actually go into the build file and type the name of the program. Boo, hiss, that's terrible. If I want to test with myprogram.csx, I've got to type that in. Well, you say to myself, well, that's ugly. That's got to be the case of using ant. But it's not. If you remember Eclipse, if you're using ordinary run mode in Eclipse, you've got to have a run mode that says, I want you to go ahead and have this command line information. So if you say, I want to call the compiler and on the command line give the name of the program, you've got to go in and edit that. And that's pretty ugly, and we all know that because there's better ways of doing it. So starting with Project 3 into 4 and into 5, we're going to have a little GUI interface. And everybody loves GUIs once they know what they are. And I'm sure you're deep in the GUI because you're high-quality products. What is a GUI? Graphical User Interface. And the thing about GUIs is it's a convenient way to interact with a program. Unfortunately, a lot of people think when we're doing computer science that we're doing crude stuff because we don't have fancy GUIs. It's not really elegant. It's rather much, though, like going back doors. Many of you, now that you're making good money, have probably gone to nice restaurants. And, you know, they have beautiful things, you know, lace curtains and real silverware and chandeliers and all that. Has anybody actually worked as a waiter, or I'm sorry, a server, or maybe a cook in one of these fancy restaurants? I'm told, and I've actually had a tour back in one of them, you go back there, it's not nearly as opulent. Behind the scenes, they have painted cinder blocks and stuff taped on the wall, and I mean, it's got to be clean and all that, but it's not elegant, because elegance is for the paying customers. The behind the scenes, it's all business. And in computing, sometimes we have the same problem, that we're all business. If we can figure out how to actually get a compiler to work, putting a GUI on top of it is easy. And maybe not easy, but it's certainly doable. But people who don't see the GUI says, oh, this is primitive. You got to go ahead and type something on a command line, just like they did 40 years ago. So what we're going to do is have a GUI available for later projects. From 3 on, you really need it, where you'll actually have 2 versions. One is it'll pop up a little box that says, please enter the name of your file. And the cool thing about that is you just say run, type the name, run again. But we actually have an alternative version that allows you to have what they call a file chooser. And that's the cool thing that seems to show you the contents of a folder, and you can go down into a subfolder and find the guy you want, click them, and say, choose that guy, and let's go ahead and run it. So really state-of-the-art type stuff, or really much closer to state-of-the-art. And that'll be available. So we know about it, just a matter of introducing it at the right stage. So you're not going to be stuck with this old primitive stuff of going and edit a file just to change a lousy file name. For the current files, it doesn't matter too much. One of the things I'll remind you in testing a scanner is you do not have to have valid programs. You can just put sequences of tokens in any order. Start with the simple ones. Can it find a plus? Can it find a minus? Then can it find an assign? Can it find a compare? Then more complex things like identifiers and reserve words, and then things like integers, finally quoted characters or quoted strings, and just mix them up in there. They don't have to be valid, so just keep adding more complex stuff until you've got a file that tests everything and everything, in which case you'll probably be happy and ready to hand it all in probably about 3 weeks. So continuing on then, we have an identifier token. That, of course, needs to be the string that's the name of the token. Can be any length you want. Doesn't matter. Java is very flexible in string length. You don't have to do any special programming. We have a char lit token here that actually stores the character value. Now the question, when you store the character value, is that in escaped form or unescaped form? And looking at the definition, it'll probably tell you. So I'll let you look at it in a minute, then you can tell me. Well, the value being stored is a char, and a char stores one character. So that means if you've gone ahead and scan, well, let's write it down. Why should I just say? What's going to be stored here is a situation where you're going to scan this. You're going to actually scan those 4 characters, and that's going to be returned to your processor. It says, I went ahead and scanned this. You know for a fact that the first and last character are ticks, so you can just throw those away. But now you have backslash n, and you have to go ahead and change backslash n, 2 characters, to the new line character. And how do you do that? It's going to be kind of embarrassing when you see it, because it almost seems circular. But you're going to have a bit of code somewhere that's going to have, what do we call this guy, char value. Now, this is, of course, going to be in code, Java code that you're executing, and it's going to say, well, duh, I took a new backslash new line, and I did a backslash new line, but the difference is, when this thing is assigned, this is a single character, because Java says, when you write down something like this, this is a representation of the invisible new line character. You could also dig out the character code for a new line and plug that guy in escaped form, but that's something you're going to have to do. And let me warn you about something which some of you will remember, some of you won't until you start doing testing. At the end, if you read the assignment already, you have a pretty easy testing driver. It simply goes ahead and reads tokens one by one, says, I'm on line so-and-so, column so-and-so, here I am. So it says, I'm a semicolon, or I'm a paren, or it may say, I'm a character constant, a quoted character. And in the case of something has a value, you print out what it has. So you're going to go along and say, okay, I've gone ahead of character, and I have this current char as my value. So it ends up saying char, or whatever, char value equals. And then in parens, just parens, so I can show you, you know, the beginning and end of something, here's my character, like A or B. What happens if you just went ahead and scanned new line, converted it into the new line character, and you print it out? What's going to come out? And particularly, what's not going to come out unless you make it come out? Backslash N. If you print a new line character, this is what you're going to get. Char equals. Because when you print a new line character, you jump to a new line. So you're saying, oh my God, this is so confusing. But it's really not. It's scrimmage. You're the guys that control the magic. You're Harry Potter or Lord Baltimore or something, and you're waving the wand, and good things have to happen or bad things, depending on which side you're on. Who are you rooting for, by the way? After a while, I got so sick of Harry, I was kind of only half rooting for him. So I finally get this guy and get it over with. So just a minor hint. Just as you're showing you that this being on the edge of the representation people can see and representation the computer really wants is something you as a scanner implementer have to handle. It's not big things. I mean, all that will happen is you'll see this and you'll say, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And what do? You go in there and you say, when I'm printing this out, if it's the new line character, I will not print out the character. I'll print out the quoted string, backslash N, which is the human readable form of that. And once it works fine. But something that you ought to be aware of. Intlet token, you have to have, in this case, you'll have, stringlet token, you have the string, and I think we did intlet before. Something else we have to have, something else you have to implement, is you have to track the line number and the column number. And some of the complexity of doing token definitions will be getting the right line number and column number. Some cases it's pretty easy, other cases it's not. And what I have here is a little class which you may use, or you may write your own, that has the fact that you have to go ahead and really track before and after. You took databases, many of you did last semester, and you probably learned all about databases, this two-stage commit business they have, one of the famous ideas they have. And part of the problem always is that you have to transition atomically from the old state to the new state. I guess what the example they always use is you're putting money in the bank or something, and you got to make sure you get the right amount of money and all that. Well, we have a similar thing here. It doesn't involve money, so it's not clearly as crucial. But you have two different sets of positions. You have the one you are at when the scan started, and then one you are at after the scan is done. And the difference is if you read a token of variable length, like an identifier, you might have been in line one, column one. Where do you say that token was? Well, traditionally we say the position of something is the line it was on. And remember, some tokens can span lines, like multi-line comments. And it has variable length. And typically you say the leftmost position. So if the identifier is many characters long, you say it's at line one, column one. That means the first character of it is at that position. But now when you resume scanning, you have to adjust your counter to say, well, okay, identifiers don't cross line boundaries. So my line number doesn't change, but my column number changes by exactly the number of characters in the identifier I scanned. Well, how do I figure that out? First thing to remember is don't reinvent the wheel. I showed you that there was this function called yytext. And I'll actually be using that on the very next line. That almost, but not quite, gives you what you want. And you got to call it with no parens. So yytext gives you the string that you just matched. But now, do I have to count characters? I could if I want to reinvent the wheel. But what do we know about Java strings? It's a class that has what? Lots of methods. And some of the methods, I mean, you should really look through it, because they have some that, for example, have something that strips case. You can take a string and put it all in uppercase or all in lowercase, which is something that at some point you may have needed, you may need in future when we do Project 4. But one of the things it has, of course, is length. One of the fundamental issues of a string is its length. You could count characters and all that, but it's there. So you just say, yytext, and what is it, dot len? Is it len or length? Length? And does it take parens or not? Most of them are methods, not all. So it's YY length. No, I'm sorry, just length. I always forget because there's a couple of ways of doing it. Is that it? Yeah, sorry. So, okay, so then, and again, you just look up in the manual and all that, and it's fine. So that would then give you the number of characters you just match, and that's how you adjust the column number. Say, oh my God, why am I doing this? Well, if you don't, who does? This notion of where something is on a line is something we as programmers and human beings have and something we have to maintain. So let's just give you a little heads up. So what this guy does is allow you to have two sets of parameters. One says, here's where I started the scan, and here's where I ended the scan. And after I end the scan, then I say the next token will have its position starting where I currently am after scanning the present token. Yeah, it's not deep stuff, but you can say, you know, you got to track both of them. So it's not quite the famous two-stage commit, but it's the same idea that you have to have before and after, and once you're sure you have the token you want, then the after goes back to the before with respect to the next token. And this is more of that. So just in boilerplate. So we have, in this case, digit 0 to 9, just because I'll need that. It turns out that we need symbol because JavaCup wants a symbol, so the type we return is symbol. That'll be available in the distribution. I just borrowed that from the definition that JavaCup has. So we'll have a have a symbol. And what that essentially has inside the symbol will be a reference to the token, I think as value, and also a code that represents what the symbol represents. And that's the thing you get from the .sim file. And finally, we need to say, when you go ahead and hit end the file, what do you want? Well, the parser has a special end the file token called sim.eof. So you return that. And in this case, end the file is invisible. So I just return a token with a line and column number 0. That seemed like, you know, a reasonable alternative. It doesn't have a line and column number, and that's my way of saying that. It doesn't really matter. It's just the end of file that the parser cares about. Ah, here's the meat of it. So this is actually the step where you get to do some programming, and I get in these lines to show you. Oh, yeah, question. Oh, JavaCup is the parser generator. Yeah, and back when Java was fresh, it was always the idea you always had to have a name that somehow suggested the beverage Java. So CUP stands for collection of usable parsers, or useful parsers, something like that. There's some very strained names you happen to have on that sort of situation. So, for example, when we were doing an earlier version of my book, we had a version of the language called Demi. Because why Demi? Demitasse, right? All the other names have been taken, though. Demitasse, you know, like you go to these really fancy little restaurants that give you a tiny little cup of coffee for $10 and not knock it back on the demitasse, and hey, good, I spent $10, I must be an important person. So, I don't know, do they serve that sort of thing here when they have the big September users meeting and all that? I know, probably the real big shots go down to Latoire or something and get the really good stuff, and you get the mass-produced stuff. But it's still very good as compared to what you get in the Union South or all the restaurants around it. So what these are individual tokens. Now, in many cases, these would actually be on a single line. I broke them up because they had a fit. In some cases, just readability. You're allowed, particularly when you get into the Java code, to have multiple lines because it's the brace matching the brace that delimits where you go. So what happens is we have two pieces here. We have the regular expression. And then the Java code. And again, each of these is independent. It simply says, parser, if you decide this is the token in the context of all the other possibilities, you go ahead and match this and call me. It actually consumes that character. So next time I call the scanner, the plus will be gone. I'll be looking at, I being the scanner, will be looking at the next character beyond it. It might be a real character. It might be white space. We have some of that down below. What I have to do is, for sure, if it's a valid token, and not everything I scan is a valid token. Comments, for example, are not valid tokens in the sense the parser doesn't know about them. So all I do is go ahead and throw it away. But I have to match it, and I probably have to do the bookkeeping because a multi-line comment is going to change the line number and column number for everything that follows, and I got to get that right. So in this particular case, this set pause says kind of remember where you are. This is the guy right now that's going to represent where I believe the token begins. I say, ah, that's a plus. That's pretty simple. All that happens is the column you were in got updated by one because it's one column, one character long. And I said, what do I want to return? Well, I got to return a symbol. A symbol takes two things. It takes the code for the token. Where do I get that? Well, remember we have that .sim file that exists. That'll be in the distribution that contains line definitions for all the various tokens with a symbol definition that says the symbol is code 29 or 13 or so on. It'll be there. It'll be produced by the scanner. The parser. Had the parser produce one, and I copied it over. So just follow that. The only thing important is you got to be sure that the file produced by the parser and the file used by the scanner are the same. In fact, that leads to, in later phases, that leads to an odd combination. Typically, you think of the scanner and then the parser. So when you're building both of them, which do you build first, the scanner or the parser, in terms of the build.xml file? You actually end up building the parser first. That sounds bass-ackwards, but the reason for it is the parser generates a sim file saying, here are all the symbols I'm expecting to parse, and here are the codes I want you to use. So, Mr. Scanner, when you generate, be sure to use my files so the numbers are proper. So if, for example, you somehow changed the parser so that it had more or fewer tokens, those code numbers would have to go over, and the scanner would have to be aware of them. So not a big deal, but it's a little bit odd, and if you see that happening, that's the explanation of why. Once they're generated, it doesn't matter anymore, but it has to be the case that the SIM file used by the scanner has got to be the one produced by the current version of the parser, particularly if the parser is adding or deleting tokens. And why would it add or delete tokens? Well, when you get to the parser, of course, you're going to start with CSX Lite again, which contains only a few constructs, and then you'll add things. So you might say, okay, I'm going to add this. Now I'm going to have this symbol. I'm going to have that symbol. Let's add them in there. I have to have them scan, so the scanner has to know how to handle them. So that'll be what's going on there. So in this particular case, it says my code is a plus. If you go into the SIM file and you're not sure what the names represent, ask me or ask the TA or ask one of your fellow workers. Most of the names are meant to be readable, but there'll be some abbreviations like LT. What does LT stand for? Excuse me? Less than, right? Cool. GT? Greater than. GE. General Electric, no. Greater than or equal. General Electric hasn't sued us or anything yet. So, actually, it turns out our programming language is called CSX, and for many years I was worried because there's another organization that uses the name CSX. And what is that? Trains. Fortunately, the trains are in enough trouble these days that the last thing in the world they need is bad publicity by suing a poor computer science prof for publicizing their names. So if you see a CSX on the side of a train, it's not like I've become rich and decided to buy a train system. It's that we, just like GE, CSX can mean multiple things. Okay, anyway, so that's a pretty simple one. But look, it just said there. Once you have that, all of a sudden you can do minus. You can do star, you can do slash. You just copy this line, change the plus to a minus, change the code, and all the rest from plus to minus or whatever, and that's it. Plus and minus and star and slash are all one character long. Line number and column number here, you say return an ordinary token, and it's at the line number and column number where the scan began. And I've just adjusted for the next guy the column to be one number. Notice that's why I have col and column. I have two different versions, where I started and where I'm going to be after the scan of this token is completed. Okay, not equal. Okay, not EQ, you can guess that one. The difference here, of course, is now I got to make sure that I increment by two, because that's two characters long. Real deep stuff here. Semicolon. You have semi. That's very similar to plus. Finally, one that has a little meat in it. Digit is 0 to 9, so this is an unsigned integer. And in this case, I'm not going to do error bounds checking. You will have to do that. I'll show you a little later, either today. I'm not sure how much time we got left. Just seconds. So let me finish up on this, and then maybe we'll get to it in the final half hour. So in this case, I match some number of digits. I know it's one or more. So in this case, what we talked about, the column gets the text by the length. And in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and create an integer lit token. And what is all this nonsense here? First of all, what's a capital I integer? That's right. It's an inert object. All the primitive types, like int and char and float and so on, have, let me finish my thought here, have what's called a wrapper class that represents a class that has their value, again, with tons of very useful constructors and methods to operate on them. So what we do here is I say, go ahead and create me a new integer. One of the constructors for a new cap I integer takes a string, which is exactly what I have. So it goes and creates the cap I integer. Why? Well, I want a number back. I had a string and I want a number. Now I could go ahead and do this nonsense of, you know, zero, go to the next position, multiply by 10, add the digit, ugh, garbage. So what I want to do in this case is there's a method called int value. And for a cap I integer, it says, give me its value as an integer. So this does the conversion, doesn't do checking. I'll show you how to do that. But this is a way of using the language effectively by saying, I've got a string and I need some way to get an integer and I don't want to program it myself. So I create a cap I integer from the text, convert it to an integer, and that becomes the parameter for a CSX int lit token. Finally, a couple of things here. What's special about backslash new line in this particular case? Hey, wait a minute, I didn't... Oh, yeah, duh, yeah, that's right. That's fine. I fooled myself, sorry. I said, I was thinking about should this be quoted or not. And this thing is not quoted in this particular case. So, because I want to match a backslash and an N, not the new line character. So in this particular case, I change the line number, and the column reverts to 1. Blank is white space, and in this case, I add 1. Notice these bottom two don't return anything because they're not tokens. They're just a matter of getting past the white space to go on and consider the next character sequence. Cool. So this is a good place to break, and we'll take another break and to about 8 o'clock, and we'll have a half-hour session, and we'll get you out of here about 8:30.